And much like Danica Patrick's love life, we are back with Open Paddock, episode number 173 for Tuesday, January 29th, 2013. I am joined tonight by none other than Mike Watzel, who is not Ricky Stenhouse.
No, I am not, and thankfully so.
And I am joined by my other Mike, Mr. Shaw, who is also not Ricky Stenhouse.
And once again, yes, glad not to be in that department.
And I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in to join us on this very special episode, where we will talk about the Daytona 24, and yes, we will have some Danica news for you.
From People Magazine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Act 1 tonight. IndyCar rules changes. IndyCar drivers news, the bane of F1 sand traps, considers a move to America. In 2, we're going to talk a little Snowdrift and Hoonigan. And then we're going to bring it up with credits where most everybody is already leaving the theater. Nürburgring broke, thus F1's schedule be broken as well. Lotus first to launch, and HRT is getting better. They're not dead yet.
Think I could go for a walk?
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's complaints at openpaddock.net if you... No, just kidding. So, gentlemen, I guess the biggest news of the weekend is Danica Patrick is dating Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
It must be a slow news week, but the sad thing is the Rookie of the Year this year is going to be dating the Rookie of the Year runner-up in NASCAR.
Oh, snap.
I bet that's going to bring all kinds of, you know, love life strife.
It's going to be interesting when it comes down to your good old who's the better driver conversation because, well, the answer is Ricky Stenhouse. But
yeah, isn't it interesting? I read a couple of the articles that came out about this, and it was basically Ricky Stenhouse was serving as a mentor to Danica Patrick. Danica is 30, Ricky is 25.
Yeah. Looks like Danica's been watching a little too much Cougar Town, don't you think? But you know what? I'm glad that she likes to surround herself with talented people because Stenhouse actually is quite a talented driver, and maybe it'll rub off on her. Who knows?
Yeah, well, so much for the eligibility of young Miss X Hospenthal. She is now taken, and all of you will have to just go back to your old articles of FHM to get your fix.
Oh, darn. I don't win the Danica sweepstakes. What a shame. Meh. Even though I must say, I'm sorry, I'll say this, but Catherine Legg is much better looking.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry, just putting it out there. Love me some Lady Cat. Okay, on to real news, gentlemen.
Indeed.
Daytona 24, won by Ganassi, yet again.
Okay, are we done yet? Sorry, I'll be quiet.
You know, come on, talking about it can be just like the event. It goes
on and on. Sorry.
It was actually a very good race this year. One thing I'd like to point out is the fact that the number 60 Michael Schenck Racing entry came back from 7 laps down, not once, but twice, and ended up finishing third.
Yeah, I saw there was a part of the coverage where Michael Schenck was, it looked like one of his arteries in his forehead was about to pop open as he yelled at an official. I don't really even know what that was about, but
they
it looked entertaining.
He got a bad call for something, yeah.
It was a bad call on pit procedure is what it is, because unlike other forms of racing where when two cars exit the pits, they can drag race to the blend line, so to mm-hmm. speak. In Grand Am, the way it works is, and I want to say ALMS has the same rule, but when cars are exiting pits, you have two lanes. You have a fast lane and a slow lane. Mm-hmm. And the first car that gets into the fast lane, which is that far outside lane, is considered to have the position. Ugh. And the car on the inside has to drop behind them, no matter if they get in front of that car or not. They have to drop behind that car. And they do that to keep people from banging into each other exiting pits.
Yeah, and then also it makes for a safer pit lane because you don't have two people drag racing out of the pits and then somebody else trying to get out and not realizing they're getting into the kerfuffle.
Yeah, and then you have moments like you had where the 31 Wayland GT car was exiting pits the other night and managed to smack into the rear tire of the 44 Magnus entry, and thus catapulting said tire into the side of John Potter.
Yes, I, oof.
Man.
Yeah, you kind of avoid a lot of that. But it was a really good race. Came down to literally the last minutes when everybody's sitting there wondering, can Wayne Taylor pull it off? Does he have enough gas? Is Max Angelelli finally going to get one here? And the answer was no. Had to come in with, I want to say, three laps remaining, essentially. And that propelled the 01 Ganassi car into the winner's circle, driven by Mimo Rojas, Scott Dixon, Charlie Kimball, and Juan Montoya. So it was a very good 24 this year. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Speaking of IndyCars... Scott Pruitt. I said Scott Pruitt, didn't I? Okay.
I guess maybe I missed that. Yeah.
And Scott did say hi to his family back home. But actually, one interesting bit of drama about that was the fact that normally Scott Pruitt would be the closer for the Ganassi team at the 24, but he was not this year because he was having problems with an injury he sustained back in, I think it was 92, in an IndyCar testing accident at Moroso where he broke both of his feet. And he was having issues with his ankle, and considering that Scott is 53 years old now, those little aches and pains kind of double up on him, and he had committed to doing one last stint in the car and then handing it over to Montoya, who was supposed to do a double and finish out the event. Well, Scott ended up doing a double and handed it back to Montoya for that last little stint. And I'm telling you, when Scott Pruitt got out of that car, he was visibly in a lot of pain. Because he was seriously limping out of the way.
Oh, that's too bad.
But yeah, on to some IndyCar news. We've got some Rulebook highlights for 2013. Mike, what do you have to say about that?
Oh, it's just kind of an interesting list of changes for the rules for next season. And I thought we could, if I could get my website to come up here. No, nothing's coming up. Crud. We'll come back to that in a little bit.
That sounds good. Let's talk about Tristan Vaudier then. He's got a ride with Schmidt Peterson.
Yeah, and it's just kind of an interesting arrangement here. Tristan Vaudier came in, you know, as the Indy Lights champion, and there were big doubts that he was going to get a ride for 2013 in the IndyCar series. There's some money coming from Indy Lights, and it's not exactly a set amount. It depends on how good the car is that you're getting into, and I'm not quite sure what that actually works out as, but trying to think, it's somewhere between $300,000 and upwards of $500,000. So he's bringing some money to the situation. They don't have a second team car that they've applied for, so there's some things that are going in his favor, but then some things that aren't. So, unfortunately, the deal wasn't done until too late, and they couldn't apply for another team entry.
Makes you wonder if they would be able to bid and make a deal with Penske for that third team spot that they applied for that they may or may not use.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's possible or not, but
yeah, I don't know how that works out.
You know, Vaudier is just such a talented kid, though. He really is, and he's been a winner in everything that he's gotten in, except for the GX class Mazda that he got in this past weekend at Daytona, which is a whole story in itself. But yeah.
Well, it does bring up you know, images of some interesting things. I mean, this is now the French super team between Simon Pagenaud and Tristan Vaudier. I expect to hear some taunting over the radio, you know, come back.
Have you ever heard?
We'll taunt you a second time.
Have you ever heard Simon Pagenaud do his Jean Girard impersonation?
I have not.
It is amazing. He talks about how he has come to America to race against Ricky Bobby and Willpower.
Ricky Bobby. Love it.
Now, I just dug up those IndyCar rule changes that we were talking about earlier.
Before we talk about that, let's talk about the story that dovetails right in there with Tristan Vaudier going to Schmidt-Hamilton. Or not Schmidt-Hamilton, it's Schmidt-Peterson, because Schmidt has a new partner. So this Peterson fellow is bought into the team. And right now, Hamilton's name is not on the on the sandwich board.
I've heard Kurt Cavan talking about this lately, and Cavan says that he has talked to Davey Hamilton, and Hamilton's not completely out of the picture. And in fact, one of the deals is that the HP money is tied to Davey Hamilton.
Yeah.
So wherever Davey Hamilton goes is where the HP money goes. And he's not said that he is definitely out or he's definitely in. He just wants to meet up with Gary Peterson before he makes a decision.
Yeah.
Basically.
His quote is, "I'm definitely not signed with Sam Schmidt, and I don't know that I will. There's other opportunities that make sense for my program a little better, and so I've got to make a decision quickly." So he's got opportunity outside of Schmidt-Hamilton. He's got opportunity with Schmidt-Hamilton. And, you know, when you're bringing this kind of program, clearly, you know, he's been joined at the hip with HP for a while, and it would be in Schmidt-Peterson's best interest to bring him back, because that's some big sponsorship. But, you know, if they've got other sponsors they're bringing in, who knows?
You know, it makes me wonder if he's going to look into the whole HVM situation.
He actually wants to win races.
Well, look at it this way, though. It's the two parts coming together. It's HVM has a car but no money, and Davey Hamilton has a money but no car.
Yeah, but I think the other side of that is Davey Hamilton has money and there are plenty of people that are interested in his money.
Yeah, I was going to say that makes it a lot easier to have the pick of the litter there. Yeah,
I mean, just think about this. He goes to Target, or not Target, but the number 38 car. There's potential there for Chip's team. There's potential for the Penske car. Maybe that doesn't fit in there, but you know, it's an option.
The first place that keeps popping in my head though is Herta.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we heard some other stuff about Herta this week. Might as well talk about it since you just added that in. Brian Herta has announced that Alex Taglioni will retain his seat in 2013. So, good deal.
I don't really see how they could do any better than Tag unless they maybe sign like a Ryan Briscoe or somebody like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is...
Right.
Go ahead. And, I mean, Tag's not bringing a whole lot of money with him, but he's bringing some money, and Briscoe brings no money.
Yeah.
So there's the deal with that one. Speaking of rides, while we're on that kind of train of thought right now, it's been announced that Mike Conway is going to do a one-off with Ray Hall Letterman at Long Beach. So maybe the door is not completely closed on Mike Conway's IndyCar career.
Yeah, I don't think it's completely closed, but it's completely closed on the ovals. I mean, nobody's going to hire this guy to be their full-time driver for a season, even if he has a change of heart and says, "Oh, but I would like to drive the ovals again." I don't think anybody's interested. Because they don't know when that change of heart's going to come back. Yeah, and as we've said on this show before, good on him. He made a decision that you know, he was no longer comfortable and no longer felt safe driving on ovals. And once that mindset gets in there, you got to get out of there. I mean, even if you feel like the guy's being a wuss and just wimping out and moving on, the sad fact is, if he felt that way, if it's in his mind, so much of this game is mental. And if he was spooked, get him off the track. However, he's very accomplished and very capable as a road course driver. So I do see him as one of these one-off guys. I'm actually kind of surprised, though, that if Ray Hall Letterman had, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to be I guess maybe I'm convincing myself otherwise as I talk it out, but going to Long Beach, that's the road street course race that pays the most money, that, well, has the most prestige. So if he's
Conway's won the race before.
Yeah, and he's, you know, if he's bringing sponsorship, that's a good race to go to. It does say that Ray Hall is not going to have a full-time second car, though, because if he had options of going with a full-time guy in that second car, they'd be, you know, pursuing those probably before they'd pick up ancillary races for, you know, individual one-offs.
Well, you know, Graham had made comments a while, but it looked like his dad's car was going to be a one-car operation for 2013 anyway.
Yeah.
So that kind of... that kind of locks it up. I wouldn't be surprised to see a second Ray Hall car at like Indianapolis or Baltimore or some of the tracks like that that are have a little bit more of a profile to them. But as far as running a second full-time car all season, no, I don't think that's going to happen at all. But, you know, like with Mike Conway, I keep thinking back with him. Here is a guy that has honestly shown promise at points in his career, and I don't think you can judge him by what he did when he was with Andretti, because he was in that fourth car, and to be quite honest with you, that was a dog of a year for Andretti, really. I keep going back to what he did when he was at Dreyer and Reinbold, and his second year at Dreyer and Reinbold, he was really starting to show some promise, and then he had that horrible wreck at Indianapolis that just derailed him.
Yeah, so. and then when he got back in the car, he had another very similar wreck with much less consequence. But you can you can understand why this guy is just rattled and doesn't want to be back in the car on an oval. And, you know, like I said, more power to him, because that's a hard decision to make. This is his career. And
if there is anybody on the grid that can sympathize with him, it's Simona. Because I can't think of two drivers that have had worse luck on ovals.
Yeah, and the thing is like you said, when you doubt yourself, it not only become a little bit of a danger to yourself, but you're a danger to others around you.
Yeah,
and you might as well just step away.
Yeah, but like I was saying, you know, this is his career. Racing is his career, and the IndyCar Series was the place where he landed. He made a very hard decision, because this severely limits his future potential.
And last little bit of ride talk for this week is Narain, my car is breaking, continues to talk up IndyCar chances.
I hate to be this way. I think we've talked about it before, but Narain Kartikeyan, he doesn't move the needle in any way, shape, or form. IndyCar does not race in India. I don't see how this is beneficial for himself. I don't see how it's beneficial for IndyCar. But, you know, if he's got a boatload of cash, then great. But, I don't know. He was nothing special in Formula One, correct?
Hey, yeah. Nobody could park a car better than him.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, talk about the skill it takes to thoroughly bury a car in the beach in Formula One. I mean, it does take some amazing talent to put that car in there so thick that even the track workers can't get it out without a crane. That said, he's one who has been proven to be able to do that on continuous occasions. So, hey, you know, hey, he's got some skills. He did win an A1 GP race.
There we go.
Against the likes of Marco Andretti. Sorry. Had to throw that out there. I don't know. I mean, he's been an off-and-on Formula One ride buyer. So coming in as an IndyCar ride buyer, I'm just not excited or impressed. Or, you know, let's just perfectly be blunt, Rubens Barrichello moved the needle. He got an entire segment of the IndyCar fandom to be very excited. He brought people to IndyCar from his home country who had a race. That said, Narain doesn't do that, so I don't
know. Before we dog Narain too much, though, I would like to point out that he did win a Legends Heat race on iRacing one time.
Really?
On iRacing? Yeah. Nice.
Well, and the good thing is he went to the Truck Series, and he's raced in the Truck Series, so he'll be able to use all that valuable oval experience racing pickup trucks. and apply that to, you know, racecraft and IndyCar, I mean, Darrell Waltrip will be thoroughly excited to talk that up.
Yeah.
No, I just don't think that open wheel is suited to gentleman drivers, as they call them, right? You know, I mean, have money, will pay for seat. I mean, no.
Work for Marty Roth, or did it.
Yeah, but it worked for Marty Roth to the point where he had to start his own team to do it.
That's true. That's
true. It wasn't even sad. At least Milka was able to not have to start her own team to do it.
And she was able to hang around. Well, yeah, that was in the darkest hour of the Indy Racing League, you know, when you've got Marty Roth and Milka Duno parading around because we don't have standards.
Now hold on a second here. I want to get this straight in my head. You're going to tell me that the combination of Milka Duno and Marty Roth is worse than the combination of Dr. Jack Miller and Racing Gardner?
Okay, fair enough. You got it there. At least Dr. Jack had a nice smile.
Dr. Jack is an awesome guy, by the way.
He gave away a lot of toothpaste.
And he had an awesome looking car, too.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, he came in kind of from the same, well, not really the same mold as Charlie Kimball, but, you know, he came in with a sponsor, with, you know, because of his affiliation as a dentist, he brought, you know, what was it, Crest?
Yeah, it was Crest.
And be on the car and all this kind of stuff. And, it actually generated interest because of his profession and everything, kind of like Charlie Kimball generates interest because of his, you know, he's got diabetes, and he's brought a company along that the only reason they're there is because Charlie is racing.
That's very true. Well, you know, we don't need another Viagra car out there, right?
Jeez, wow. Please, no, let's not go there.
We'll leave those for NASCAR, thanks.
Obviously, I'm not making a comment on Charlie Kimball's talent level compared to Dr. Jack Miller, because Charlie Kimball has proven he belongs there.
Definitely. Yeah, Charlie is immensely more talented than Dr. Jack Miller ever.
Yeah.
And he did get his first 24-hour win. So,
oh, very nice, yes.
Because that was you know, his rookie time. He had never done, you know, one of the toughest things they were saying with that, actually kind of switching back that Daytona 24, but mm-hmm. The toughest thing for him was having to deal with, here you're going into the same seat as all these other guys of all different sizes.
Mm.
That is not a comfortable thing to do if you're tall or if you're short or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you should have heard Michael Waltrip talking about that. Because Michael Waltrip, I want to say, is like 6'4", 6'5", something like that.
Bookity, I got hemorrhoids.
And the shortest driver on his team this year was 5'6".
Oh my gosh, he must have felt like he was scrunched up like in a little ball driving that car.
They had an in-car cam, and Clint Bowyer was getting out, and Michael Waltrip was getting in. And first thing they did was they pulled out all the seat inserts, and then they shoved the seat all the way to the back.
No.
And Waltrip was commenting that he was having problems because whenever he turned right, the shift paddle would hit the knee and automatically downshift the car because he was so scrunched in. And he was having to drive with his head cocked to the left so he could see under the sun visor.
So wow. You're saying he needs to get on a team with Justin Wilson.
Basically.
Right.
Yes. we pick our grand damn teams based on height.
Driver height, yes.
pulling people off of, you know, centers off of college basketball teams, things like that. Can you drive a car? Well, I've driven.
One interesting thing, though, that I did hear Charlie say during the 24 was he was talking about Chip's philosophy when it comes to fault while driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
Said, if you get taken out by a GT class car, it's your fault. If you take out a GT class car, it's your fault. If you put it into the wall, it's your fault. If the wheel comes off, it's your fault. The only way it is not your fault is if a meteorite falls from the sky and hits your car as it's going around the track. Then it is not driver error.
That is priceless. That's awesome.
Yeah. He must have something written in their contract that all damage is driver's responsibility to take care of than in the fine print. Meteorite, act of God, not your fault. Everything else.
Well, it's like, yeah. I remember hearing Graham Wright Hall talk one time about getting in trouble for throwing Chip's steering wheel.
Oh, nice. Funny. Yeah.
So we've got some.
It's cost how many $1,000s?
Yeah. Well, one last comment on that is, remember how Scott Dixon used to refer to Chip Ganassi as Cheap Ganassi.
Cheap Ganassi. Yeah.
Cheap Ganassi. And that was during contract negotiations, I believe, once. It just slipped out. Anyway, back so on got... to the headliner of the IndyCar segment that unfortunately went dead link.
We found a new link.
We did. Thank you, Auto Week, for the new link. So let's talk about notable updates and changes to the rules for the upcoming IndyCar season. First on the list is, if anybody's going to have a flashback, this is the time to do it. The pole sitter must start from the inside front row on the start, recall that last year the pole sitter and the race leader on restarts could pick which side to start on.
Oh, right.
If you recall, the only time that anybody picked a different side of the track to start on, it was Ryan Briscoe. And if you recall, he spent the rest of that race arguing with the race officials about, but he went too early!
Right. Oh, yes. That was Baltimore, right? Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah, I like the fact that Bo Barfield's like, you know what, let's just do away with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's neat to have the option in there, but the thing it does is if the pole sitter doesn't, or the race leader doesn't make up his mind early, it mixes up the field because, you know, if you're, hey, I'm restarting in third, so I know I'm on this side of the track, you know going around the corner that that's what it's going to be instead of just waiting to the last minute. No, he went that way, so I've got to go this way. And it just takes a little of the confusion out. So,
yep.
Does being able to pick honestly add that much, really?
No, I don't think it does. Obviously, there are tracks where it may be more beneficial one side or the other, but I think they made a wise decision. They looked at it and they said, you know, it only happened once last year that the leader chose a different lane, and judging by that, they'll never do it again because the leader got passed.
and you know, essentially the leader has the selection on when to accelerate.
Yes.
Anyway. So you kind of negate any advantage that you would have by being inside or outside. So
the leader has the decision on when to accelerate. However, if the green flag is waving, then...
And you're between the cones.
And the leader...
Yeah, then it's all moot.
Then see Ryan Briscoe complaining to the officials.
That's right.
And wondering where he's going to be driving this year.
Maybe we should start referring to him as Juan and Briscoe. I don't know.
Something like that. Pit selection has changed a bit, not a big deal, but they used to base it on qualifying for the previous event, previous like event. So if you were qualifying at a road course, your qualifying order would determine your pit selection for the next road course. Now they're just going to do it so, pit selection occurs based on the qualifying of the last race, whatever, whether it's road course, street course, oval, short oval, airport, and Pikes Peak.
That eliminated a lot of questions because, you know, we would have that nice gap from Belle Isle, and then we would have it's like two or three oval races, and then we're at Mid-Ohio, and then everybody's wondering why Billy Bob Thornton has pit stall number one and Angelina Jolie's in pit stall 17.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, so. I mean, it makes sense, like you said, because you go whole months on end where you're not racing on ovals. And, yeah, it just makes a little more sense. So, pit lane speed has been adjusted to be consistent based on type of track. All ovals will be 60 miles per hour, and all road street courses will be 50. In the past, this has been different per track based on the width of the pit lane and all of that, but they've standardized that. Makes sense. Makes it easier for the teams to set up the cars.
The only thing I can see being an issue with that is only on ovals. at least, where the pit road speed limit for Indianapolis is the same as the pit road speed limit for Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a it's a little bit. But since it is a safety thing, more than overriding more than anything, it's a safety thing. It makes sense that they put a cap on it. And it makes sense that street courses are slower because, well, road street courses usually have much narrower pit lanes. And, you know, judging by, say, Mid-Ohio, much shorter pit lanes.
Yeah. The pit lane at Mid-Ohio holds, what, 8 cars? Something like that?
Yeah, it's pretty much it. You know, they come in, they pull up in front of their pit stall. They come out and they put the jack up. They put a couple of wheel dollies under the car and push it in, you know, parallel. Then they drop the jacks and get the car serviced, and then they get the wheel jacks and the dollies out and push it back out.
It's pretty cool.
Sometimes they do employ a shoehorn to get it between the two cars that it's pitting between. So it's pretty easy.
They ought to do it like Formula One style when you see the drivers pull into the garage, you know, and you see them come down the pit road, then they all of a sudden make that hard turn to the right, and then the crew runs out and pushes them back into the garage.
Nice, yeah. See, and that's probably what's going to have to happen when the Nationwide Series goes to Mid-Ohio this year. They're probably going to have to do something like a Formula One style pit where you can only pit on, you know, if you're a two-car team, well, you share a pit stall.
Yeah.
If you're on or something like these are the you can pit on odd laps, you can pit on even laps, and because it's just going to be a madhouse in that pit lane. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Or do you remember how they used to have the island at Sonoma?
Yeah.
They called it Gilligan's Island.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like those 8 pit stalls out by themselves in the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen events out at IRP where these pit stalls just ring the track. You know, it's just crazy, crazy stuff. Oh, well, moving on. Hey, strategy. The teams are going to be allowed to determine the quantity of fuel that they put in their car at the start of the race.
I like that.
That is an interesting one. Because
just think about that. You can choose to have less fuel just to get, you know, be a little bit quicker, be a little bit lighter, and get that, you know, forward position maybe.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, if you're looking at it, you're like, hey, we're going to design this race around 3 stops. And, some, you know, we're looking at it, and it could be done in, like, 2.85 stops. Well,
right.
If they all fall right, then, well, we'll be able to do it. But maybe you look at it, and you're like, hey, 3 stops. We make it 3 stops. We design it around 3 stops. We put some flexibility in the middle of the race, but we have bookends. We have, the start of the race where we're lighter, and we can gain some positions and then come in and pit and hope for some yellows and whatever. I mean, that's a good call. It's a good call not making everybody start on a full 18.5 gallon fuel in their tank with a few ping pong balls floating around to equalize the tanks.
Yet IndyCar also just added a bunch of laps to races to take fuel strategy out of the equation.
Oh, we talked about that last week. You and I both know that that's crap.
Yeah.
Look at how much more crap it is if they can adjust their amount of fuel on start.
Yeah, it's like I said, it came from the same press release as we talked about last week, where they talked about how we're going to make the start times more consistent, you know, throughout the week, throughout the season.
Oh, that's right.
So we're going to have 9 different start times for 19 races. It's like, really?
So much more consistent, of course.
It's awesome. let's see. Interference and qualification. If you are deemed to have interfered during qualification, you will not be allowed to move on to the next segment of qualifying. Before, they did this thing where they took away your 2 fastest laps and what have you. Well, now they're going to you don't move on, and that's that. And they also will take away your 2 fastest laps so that if there's anybody else who doesn't transfer on as well, that you're slower than, well, you move behind them too.
That's not bad.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's a good move because it puts more teeth, more bite behind the rulings by race control. So
the only person I think last year that would have had a problem with that was Ryan Hunter-Reay because he got nailed on interference several times through the season.
Yeah. They set the push to pass stuff there, but they made it so 10 pushes, and depending on the event, the duration will be between 15 and 20 seconds.
But what I like about the rule change is that's line right there.
Ah, no activation delay or reset time. Yeah, that is good.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Remember how the drivers were just complaining about it. Remember the activation delay. They'd push it, and they would just hope that when they got through that corner, when it should kick in, that they weren't blocked by somebody.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, I can see the reset time. That makes sense. But the activation delay, that was just dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe their initial intent was to make it strategic on how you used it, and also make it so that you couldn't respond. Probably more in that, so that you couldn't respond by pushing the button when you see somebody is pushing the button. It's too late by then.
Or you just end up being like willpower, where you just wait until the last 10 laps, and you just push it every lap after that.
Yeah. I'm just toying with you. Look, I can hold this button down.
That's right.
You wait till that very last lap and you just hold the button down and make it. It's like one huge push to pass.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's see. Specs for Texas have been updated, so they're going to use common aerodynamic parts as they do at other ovals. Cars will have the same amount of downforces at Texas as they did in 2012, but they'll be using.
Using the Speedway kit.
Yeah. Iowa specs will see a slight decrease in downforce to further enhance car control. I'm interested to see that because Iowa's already a good race, and taking more downforce away is only going to make it better. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, was it where was it last year that I think it was Texas and both at Iowa where they did reduce downforce last year, right? Where the car drivers actually had to drive the car?
Yeah, especially at Fontana and Milwaukee. And
I thought it was Iowa
as well. They had reduced downforce. I think they're playing with it at Texas, and they liked what they saw, and they continued to decrease the downforce when they went into the other races, and it worked out very well.
So. Well, wasn't Justin Wilson though? Didn't he have though where he didn't have those parts on there or whatever? So he was getting the more downforce or something.
I don't remember.
He had some extra tricky bits on it that were giving him a little more downforce, and the crew didn't make some tub modifications that they were supposed to make properly.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what that was. I remember.
As I understand, I've been told by some people close to it, though, that it wasn't enough to really make any difference.
Holy crap.
What is that? May have some breaking IndyCar news.
Dun-dun, dun-dun.
Yeah, this is from Jenna Fryer. Let's see if this is real.
Uh-oh. Well,
yeah, this is IndyCar news, actually.
Oh, okay.
Well,
what we got?
Breaking news.
And it may change your opinion on someone. Ashley Judd splits from husband Dario Franchitti.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
It is.
So we're back to the People magazine cover.
Exactly. We were joking about that before the show, but tonight on Entertainment Tonight, when racing and drivers' relationships go bad.
And ironically, this link is people.com.
Oh, funny.
That is. I see it right there. Yep.
Well, you know, I can understand that Dario wants to get out of the shadow of his much more accomplished wife.
Oh, ouch. That's painful.
The thing I'm most grateful for is now we will not have to listen to Ashley Judd ramble on about what a gentleman driver her husband is.
Yes, Ashley Judd. Oh, you know, if they split up, like they're saying, and Dario comes to race the 500 next year, and he wins the 500, I'm not going to complain like I have in the past. I mean, Dario is okay. He's a good guy. He's a great personality. He's fun to listen to and talk. But what makes it impossible, it's like sandpaper, is when that little woman gets out there dancing on the grid like she's something special. She may be elsewhere, but not in Indy. Get lost, woman.
Wankers.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, well. Since we're not people.
Sorry.
Often.
That just popped up in the bottom corner of my screen. I'm like, wait a minute, that's Jennifer Heyer.
Stand by for more, you know, crazy revelations like Roger Penske's son is peeing on more women.
Oh, man.
Stream of justice, thank you very much.
Stream of justice. My goodness.
Wow.
Arrow specs for the new event at Pocono are currently set at Indianapolis regulations.
Very cool. Glad to see that they recognize the same thing NASCAR does, that going to Pocono is about the same thing as going to Indy. Car numbers are going to be increased to 8 inches tall on the rear wing instead of 7. This is for improved visibility and help you possibly not mistake Rubens Barrichello's 8 for a blue ball with red lines around it and no indication that it's a number.
By the way, that was the worst number ever.
Yes, it was.
All drivers are required to wear helmets.
Yeah. Just
that meter exceed FIA 8860.
Yeah. Yeah, they've just upgraded their helmet specs. No big deal. The point structure is probably the biggest thing that we really need to talk about. The points are going to remain the same, except for two changes. Number one, you're going to get a point for leading a lap. This effectively means that the person that leads the most laps gets 3 points. So, kind of a...
Stay out under yellow!
Yeah, you're going to see a lot more of that. You are going to see a lot more of that. And maybe that'll be kind of fun because it'll make some funky strategy things happen that right now we don't see because there's no incentive to do it.
Well, and another thing too is that's going to encourage people to be more active up front and not just sit there in line and wait till the end.
No, that's true. That's also true. Maybe NASCAR has a good idea there. I'm certainly for it. I like these bonus points that they award for various things. And really, you know, when you look at, and I think I saw this in the Indianapolis Stars feed, if you look at the most recent championships, we're talking about 10-point, 5-point, 6-point, 3-point spreads. Last year, if they were doing this point system with the extra bonus point for leading the most laps, Will Power would have won the championship.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, by 1 point.
Wow.
Well, you know, I saw another...
I wonder how much he campaigned for that.
Yeah, exactly. Too little.
Another interesting breakdown I saw was somebody did it on another website using the old champ car points formula. Mm-hmm. Or the cart points formula. Mm-hmm. And Will Power would have won it by like 6 points.
Okay.
Under that scenario.
Yeah, and you know, it's fun to go back and say, oh, but if they did this, but in the end, everybody knows what the rules are at the start of the season. They shouldn't change throughout the season unless Brian Barnhart is officiating.
another change in the point system that I like is how they're doing the differentiated points after 19th place now.
Yeah, I was getting a little tired of that, and I'm kind of glad they addressed it. Positions 19 through 25 will no longer be awarded 12 points. In the past, positions 19 through 25 were awarded 12 points, and then after 25, it went down to 11, and then another place it broke down to 10. This was to encourage people to, if your car is crap, don't try and fix it and bring it back out. You're still going to get points. However, what they're going to do, 19 through 25 will continue 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6 points. And then beyond that, everybody gets 6 points or 5 points or something like that. I can't remember.
That's fair enough.
So, kind of cool. Yeah, they've changed the engines a bit. Right now they're supposed to go 1,850 miles before changing engines. They're going to increase that to 2,000 miles between engine changes. If you make an unapproved engine change, it will continue to give you the 10 grid spot penalty. I know that was a big bone of contention last year, and a lot of people complained about it. And in the end, I think IndyCar looked at it and they're like, this is the one thing that we can do that forces the manufacturers not to just spin their way into oblivion. They also basically they changed the rule so that if you were racing on your sixth engine for the season, you could not gain you will not be able to gain manufacturer points. So I think that's a good idea as well. If you are past the manufacturer's engine limit for the season, you will not be able to score points for the manufacturer because they effectively are outside of their own framework of what they were intending to do. So very cool.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if that's going to curb a lot of this. Hey, we think there might be a problem with this engine, so we're going to pull it. Business that happened last year.
That's a very good point, and a very good idea for the IndyCar series to implement because, just like you said, well, this one doesn't seem up to snuff. We'll just yank it.
Yeah, that was helped Dario when he went around just on the – I think it was – what they were, they weren't even up to full speed yet. They were doing just the – getting ready to go in his engine.
Yeah, I can't remember which race that was. It may
have
been
Iowa.
Yeah.
It was like Iowa or Fontana or something like that. Yeah, he didn't even make the start.
It just blew up on the on the warm up lap. Something something of a statement about his relationship with his celebrity wife.
Next time I see Dario, I'm going to offer to buy him a beer because that's that's beer worthy.
Okay, fun stuff. That's pretty much the highlights from the rule book, and that also is the end of our IndyCar coverage, unless you have anything else you want to throw in. Any more late-breaking tweets from Jenna Fryer?
Let's see. Let me check real quick. Simon Pagenaud tells Angela Buckman that he's coming for her job. Let's see.
Highly productive stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Jay Howard went to yoga with his wife. Now his back is killing him.
Nice. Yoga is awful.
And let's see. Gustavo Yakiman reposted a picture that Tony Kanaan put up that says, "Never get jealous when you see your ex with someone else because our parents taught us to give our used toys to the less fortunate."
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Oh, my.
Hey, Mike, tell us about the snow cone rally.
The snow cone rally? Oh, wow. Yeah, well, back to racing that's actually happening.
Yes, indeed.
Because rallies, they're the ones that are always willing to be out there, and doesn't matter the conditions. And, boy, the snowier and slipperier, the better. So Snowdrift, to recap, is up in Michigan, up in Atlanta, Michigan, with the northern part of Michigan there, and it was definitely snowy and slippery. Not as slippery as last year where they had like a bunch of glare ice, but they had good pack snow this time.
Was it drifty?
So, what's that?
Was it drifty?
It was drifty, and there was lots of drifting through the corners and hitting snow banks, you know, and bouncing off them and all that stuff. It was if rallying throughout the year is anything like how it's already started out, I don't know why this stuff is not televised as much as it should be. I mean, it's just insane how awesome it is. This event, the first day, we'll start with the top drivers. You know, you got Ken Block, you got David Higgins, which is the factory back Subaru. You've got Antoine Lestage, who's got the Mitsubishi Evo. So you got that Subaru versus Mitsubishi battle always going on. You know, the crazy Leo was in there too, trying to duke it out with those guys. Not quite as fast, but trying to keep up. And
the Chief Hoonigan himself showed up.
The Chief Hoonigan did show up. I didn't know he was going to be there. It wasn't till a last minute thing that I saw that he actually was entered. He wasn't on the original entry list.
We'll talk about that next story, but it's kind of a wide ranging program he has this year. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's going to be a busy, busy guy. But, you know, more power to him. I'm really proud that he gets the word out to a sport that I think needs and deserves a lot more attention than what it's getting. So for those people that think that, you know, he's not as good a driver or whatever, you know what? Anybody that can help promote the way that he does, and he's not a bad driver. He's not maybe as good as, you know, the top guys, but he's good. He's just not amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, back to the event, he had a very unfortunate incident. Stage two, on the first day, his car stopped because of an alternator failure. Turns out an unlucky rock on a snow event somehow went up in and smacked the alternator and broke apart on it, and he was done.
Ugh.
I mean, that's pretty disappointing. He really wanted to be out there, especially to get more experience on the snow. He just doesn't have a lot of the ice and snow experience, and he was really excited to get out there and duke it out. So that really left Antoine Lesage and David Higgins to really start battling it out. And what a battle it was. At the end of day one, half a second separated them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Going into day two, they were trading stages back and forth, and it was just unbelievable. And unfortunately, here I'm just following this just on Twitter, you know? Mm. And at the end of so it was 20 stages. The last service was after the end of Special Stage 17, which is a super special, little short thing where they do it in front of the crowd kind of thing. Higgins had pulled up a 12.7-second lead. Okay, sounds like he could, you know, just kind of not quite walk away with it, but 12.7 seconds is a good amount when it comes to rallying, except for the coming up where there was a longer stage, a 15-mile stage.
Mm-hmm.
So we get into Stage 18. Higgins then, for some reason, just really puts the foot down, ends up 21.3 seconds ahead of Lesage. So you think Lesage would just kind of give it up, save the car. But he felt good on the long stage. The long stage that was 15 miles was the next one up, and Higgins decided on his end that, well, I've got enough cushion, I'll take it easy, make sure I save the car, don't go off and hit a stump, something like that. On the other hand, Lesage is just amazing run. By the end of stage 19, the penultimate stage, 1.4 seconds behind David Higgins. He gained 19 seconds in one stage.
Wow.
Just epic. And so then it came down to the very last little short stage. I think it was only like 5 miles long, stage 20. And Lesage pulls out the win by 6.2 seconds. So here it is, the privateer. Yeah, he's got backing from Rockstar Energy, but he's not a factory-backed Subaru, you know, that kind of thing. He's still got a regular car that's been converted to rally,
mm-hmm.
not a car that's been stripped 100% down to nothing and rebuilt, you know, by factory standards, you know. So it
Very
was
cool.
really awesome to see that just battle back and forth.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine the head game going on between the two. Lesage is out there like, herp-de-derp, this is all I've ever known, this is great, I'm having a good time driving, this is a blast, you know, these tires seem to work pretty well on this surface, and Higgins is out there going, crap, where are my studs?
Yeah, and you know, you've got that's one thing that is kind of nice, you know, in the snow events or the slick events in general, you know, they won't have the power and speed on the gravel probably that Higgins will have. But in the snow and ice, it's a great equalizer. Yeah. When you have bad, slippery conditions, horsepower doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I shouldn't say, you know, that Lesage is out there doing, you know, the only thing he's ever known on non-studded tires. So I'm sure they allow the studs in the Canadian events.
Actually, they do not.
They
were extremely excited because this was for them to get all planned and set up for next week is Pierce Neige, I think is the name of the...
Okay.
Event up there in Canada, and no studs there either, apparently.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So maybe I had that peg. Maybe I'm in their heads.
There you go. But it was just, again, it was really fun to pay attention to what was going on there, even if it was just, you know, keeping track via Twitter or, you know, whatever feeds I could get info on. But, you know, these guys were really battling hard. And the sportsmanship, I mean... I don't think anybody congratulated Antoine Lesage more than David Higgins did.
Yeah,
you know,
that's cool. That's
it was
cool.
Really cool. And like I said, they really persevered. Crazy Leo ended up third, so he ended up keeping it on the road. Last year, he was on the podium but had that stripped away just because of apparently he had something damaged to his catalytic converter, and when they went through their scrutineering, it was found that his car was not legal to drive anymore, which you're supposed to still be, and so I ended up taking away his third place last year. So
Oof.
So he got a real third place this time. Ken Block, he did actually get to, they have Super Rally for this event, so he did get to come back on the second day, and he did have a few stage wins, got his experience that he was looking for, was frustrated that he wasn't really in contention, but he was able to come back from 14th, I think he started on day two, with all the time penalties, and moved all the way up to 6th.
Oh, sweet. So, that's good.
Not bad, then again, with the horsepower of that car, and you know, it's a freaking WRC car, but even more powerful. You know, it is. It's got the Focus 2.0 engine in it, turbocharged up to like 600 horsepower, something crazy, whatever it is. Maybe 400,
they're allowed to run that?
But, you know, it's not the standard, you know, 1.6-liter turbos they're doing with WRC. They actually have the 2-liter in it. So,
wow.
Even more torque, yeah.
That's crazy.
Just kind of going, go ahead.
No, that's pretty crazy, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you guys head on down to see 100 Acre Wood, it's going to be a hell of a fun to watch him put the pedal down on that thing.
Yeah, I think Doug's the only one that's going to make it 100 Acre. So.
Ah, bummer.
Yeah, I just can't swing it this year. That's a 10-hour drive for me, and it's not in the cards this year.
Yeah, that's one event I've always wanted to go see. Maybe one of these days, but it's multiple days for me to get over there. So.
Yeah, indeed. You got your license, right? Pilot's license.
I do have my pilot's license, and in this time of year, getting over there would be pretty sketchy on a VFR. So.
Yeah, indeed. So, cool.
Other things, I'll just kind of go through the list here. Fourth place went to Ugo Desdreniers, whatever he is. You know, honestly, I've not seen this guy before. If he's doing the whole championship, it'd be nice to see him when he comes out to Oregon Trail and meet him, but really don't know anything about the guy.
And ask Adam him how Yeoman. To pronounce his name.
Yeah, exactly, because I have no idea. Adam Yeoman and the FY Racing team, him and Jordan Schultz, his co-driver, they ended up fifth, which is great. They've had a number of offs this last year, and so it's nice to see them finish. They actually got a third place at Oregon Trail. Really nice couple of guys, and they've been working hard. So nice to see them do that. Like I said, Ken Block was sixth. And that's it for the open class and super production. Evan Line, he ended up leading the super production. Super production kind of really didn't matter too much because Clint O'Sullivan, who won it last year, didn't even start this year because he didn't have his car ready, even though he was entered. And right after stage one, his mission broke for Fitzsterix. Was the guy that was the runner-up behind Lachlan for second place in the championship last year. So Evan Klein just kind of coasted his way through. Not really completely coasted, but he definitely didn't have to work too hard. Mostly younger drivers behind him. And then in eighth place, went to two-wheel drive, everybody's favorite, Andrew Thomery Picard. At least we know it's Doug's favorite, right? He actually took the turbo off his car. They have a new car for this year. They kind of redid the ugliest car in Rally America. It has got to be the Scion Rally XD. It is the ugly duckling car, you know. But, you know, he knows how to drive. That's true. And he was able to, without the turbo, not just spin the wheels on that little front-wheel drive car whenever he wanted to get going. And so that actually proved working really well. He won 19 of the 20 stages in his class.
That's pretty cool. Now, I'm guessing that as they go on to events that don't have ice and snow, that the turbo goes right back on.
That is correct, yeah. You'll see that turbo reinstated for when they hit down to 100 Acre Wood in February.
So removing the turbo was a crude form of traction control.
It sure was. You know, it was That's a effective. Smart. It worked for them. There was another guy actually I was reading about that last year in his first event. He actually was a super production guy that I think got third place in super production. His name escapes me right now. But last year when he did his first event in a super production car, he actually removed the turbo from his car just so he could get used to the speeds, you know, on those stages. I think it was like STPR or one of those. And, you know, then he eventually put the turbo on the car, you know, as he improved his pace. So, I can see cases where that works out for you.
Yeah.
Then just kind of rounding things up, Dylan Van Way, also in two-wheel drive, ended up ninth. He's got that turbocharged Ford Fiesta. It's not really an R2, so it's not the spec R2 kind of rally thing. It's kind of his own build. but he's got a turbocharger on it. He was able to come up in ninth place overall, second in two-wheel drive. And then 10th went to Mason Moyle, young kid who's out of Minnesota, I think. And he ended up getting second in Super Production. Big improvement over last year. He's been having a number of offs and whatnot, and so it's nice to see him finish well. So that's kind of the top 10 there. But again, most of the action was at the front. It was very exciting to see just this back and forth between David Higgins and Antoine Lesage. What an epic race. And again, why is stuff like this not televised? I would have liked to have just a camera there at the end of that final stage and some of the interviewing just to get their reactions, of how that ended up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some video that comes up over time, but Rally America seems to be very slow on getting their videos up, and you can understand why. Sometimes they are in places that has no connectivity.
Yeah, they don't. They don't have any connectivity, that's true. But, now that they got that whole USAC, connection,
mm-hmm.
You'd think that maybe they'd have some contact to get a satellite truck somewhere or something like that.
Right.
That's USAC. Never mind.
Seriously, USAC is lucky to get their premier stuff is their circle track stuff. Their sprints and midgets and silver crowns, and you're lucky to get a merchandise trailer at some of their events. Nonetheless, coverage. You basically have to go to web forums to find out what's happening at the track because USAC does a poor job of that. So, anyway.
Well, let's change gears to Ken Block and Hoonigan Racing. We ended up having him announce his brand new team and headquarters. So that's some pretty exciting stuff. Comments? Anyone?
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, Ken Block has a interesting situation. I mean, it's no longer the Ford Monster World Rally team. Monster is still a sponsor on the car, but I think Ford is dropping to the wayside as far as things go with that.
Yeah, it seems so. Maybe it's because he's just in so many different events and they've got so many sponsorships going out there all over that, trying to stick to him when he's doing so many other things that, it's hard to focus. Mm-hmm. I think I can see Monster wanting to focus on somebody that's maybe going to be 100% over in this specific sport and 100% over in that sport. And, Ken Block, I mean, here's what he was kind of saying about 2013 overall on the post here. It's like, once again, I'm trying to fit in as much driving as possible for 2013. Unlike most drivers who only compete in one series, I'm very fortunate to be able to race in so many different disciplines. Between competing in X Games, Global Rallycross, Rally America, Gymkhana Grid, and he's going to do 3 rounds of the WRC.
Yeah.
It's going to be an awesome year. I can't wait to get it started. Holy cow, how does he have any time to sleep?
Yeah, seriously, you've got X Games. You've got 4 X Games events this year because it's global now. They're going to be doing Los Angeles, Brazil, Spain, and Germany for X Games.
Right.
They're having 2 winter X Games events, like the first one just took place. I can't remember where the second one's going to take
Aspen,
place.
Aspen, yeah. Yeah, I don't know where the second one is.
Yeah, then Global Rallycross. I don't see if he's competing all events. I think he is because he's just saying that blanket statement. He's going to compete all 7 Rally America events, which this was what we were talking about. We didn't know this last week's show. It was like Wednesday of last week after our show had been recorded when this came out. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be racing all of the Rally America events. It's like, wow, and that's this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all, what? You're there?
Yeah, any bets on what WRC events he's going to run?
Obviously Mexico is going to be one, yeah. So that'll be the round 3. From there, I'm not sure. I would expect him to try and make it over, like, at the end of the year to the British one. Yeah. So get in and do the one in Britain, Wales Rally GB. Beyond that, I don't know what he's going to try and fit in there. We don't even know what the Global Rallycross schedule is yet. It's supposed to be released sometime this week, and yeah. I'm sure all of his other schedules still kind of pin on that.
Yeah, he may have advance notification of what that actually is, you know, because he's in the know and we're not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he did say that, yeah, I'm going to compete 3 rounds, and everybody in WRC world has been asking him, well, what are they going to be, and there's been no response yet. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine, you know, he's targeting something like Finland, but, you know, like you said, it depends on what these other schedules are. If he's competing a full season in something, he's not going to break away to go to Finland, but, you know, who knows? Gymkhana Grid, this is his series that he started up. They ran 5 events in Europe last year, and they're looking to do that again. They're also trying to get Gymkhana Grid back in the United States for 2013 as well. So, kind of cool. He's also doing Octane Academy 2. So if you were into that reality show, I never watched an episode, but I'm sure it was cool. Then last but not least, he's also going to do a Gymkhana 2013 project with DC Shoes. If you saw last year's Gymkhana in the streets of San Francisco, that was awesome.
That was the best one yet. It really was. That was very impressive. So yeah, big schedule for Ken Block, and you know, like I said, I'm happy for him as a promoter. You know, he might not be the number one best at any one of these disciplines other than maybe his own created Gymkhana Grid thing. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said, hats off to him for doing what he does to promote motorsport and specifically the ones involved rally cars.
Very cool. Well, is that all we have for rally this evening?
Well, I got one last thing I was going to touch on. You know, one thing that I was really complaining about and continue to whine about is the lack of coverage for rally and whatnot. And I know it's going to take a while. So Red Bull Media House took over the promotion for WRC. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it takes a while for lawyers to make contracts. You know, they want to take as much time as possible if they can bill the most amount, right?
This I'm aware of.
Yes.
I can tell you from my everyday experience that that is correct.
Exactly. So everybody was very disappointed. I mean, Britain didn't get any WRC coverage at all, whether even on paid services or anything, when it came to Monte Carlo. And, you know, everybody is just flabbergasted that there was hardly any viewing options for the first round. But in a sign of change, we have WRC.com posted on the website for the first time ever full episodes of each day's coverage of Monte Carlo right on the website.
Wow. Okay.
Commercial free, watch it when you want.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is just a signal of the future changes. I expect over time we'll get things getting better. I think we'll see more TV deals. Speed hopefully will get back in the game as far as being another TV host for at least a summary of what happened. I'd like to get back to somebody doing the daily reviews of the events. But it's nice to see that they're at least putting out the carrot and showing that, look, we're willing to put this stuff online. That's really awesome.
Yeah, indeed.
So that's it for Rally News.
Okay. Well, now we go into the credits of the show. You can get up and leave your seat now, but you never know what happens at the end of the credits, right?
Never know.
You never know.
Easter egg, right?
We're jumping into Formula One coverage, and we'll go through this briefly because sometimes the crap that goes on in Formula One is worth mentioning and then going on and shaking your head. One of those is the German Grand Prix. Who was the world champion last year?
Oh, that would be Mr. Vettel.
Herr Vettel.
Herr Vettel, yeah.
Who won the Race of Champions this year? That would have been Germany.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, they won the country. I was thinking Romain Grosjean.
Oh. Yeah, well, we have some news about Romain. We'll talk about him in a little bit. The German Grand Prix at Nürburgring, it's in doubt that it's going to happen. The reason being, Nürburgring basically went bankrupt in the last year. Some politicians resurrected it, but they've been trying to renegotiate their deal with Bernie. And you know how Bernie is. Nine!
As in $900 million is what I want to do this race.
Exactly. With a 10% escalator. Anyway, so yeah, this is where things are going. The German Grand Prix at Nürburgring, the talks have stalled. Ecclestone's walked away from it. The problem with that is there's potential maybe that they'll go to Hockenheim, but Hockenheim's under the same financial straits right now. Here's where this goes. You've got this big chunk of the schedule from June 30th to, let's see, August 25th, where you have one race, the Grand Prix of Hungary, because the German Grand Prix isn't running. You've got the August break, which you're off for an entire month. And then you've also got the death of the Grand Prix in the United States, the one that was supposed to take place in Germany. You've got all this conspiring to make this perfect storm of 12 weeks with one race.
Yeah, you gotta love that traditional summer break that they take.
Yeah, well, it's all of Europe, and hey. You wonder why Europe is in such desperate financial straits? It's because they take the summer off.
Yeah.
Part of it. But, you know. Anyway, so we've got quite an issue. If you're following Formula One, if you're interested in watching races week in, week out, you're going to be sorely disappointed when we get to that chunk of the schedule. At this point, there are not any viable alternatives for taking these events places. Obviously, they can get something back together with Germany. Bernie just has to drop his demand.
I just thought of a German circuit that we haven't thrown out there yet.
Yeah, what's that?
Lausitzring.
Lausitzring. You know, the Austrian circuit, the old A1 ring, which is now the Red Bull ring, has been thrown out as a potential. But basically, they're like, hey, we could do it here. Make us a deal. Portugal has reared their head in being interested in filling the slot of the New Jersey race. However, so far, nothing really is on the table. France reared their head. And obviously, Red Bull Ring reared their head. Nobody really is able to come up with the cash that Bernie wants.
Let's take it back to the old Kyalami circuit in South Africa.
Yeah, I don't know what they do. at this point, though, it's kind of difficult to come up with a race to replace it. I mean, we talk about here in the States, if you're a year away from an event and you don't have tickets for sale, you might want to reconsider, because you need to build the ticket sales long term. It's not something that you can just pick up and sell the tickets overnight. So much so Formula One events when the tickets cost $350 a piece or more. So kind of a weird situation. I mean, they've talked about Turkey possibly taking one of those dates, but in the end, they've got to be able to cough up the money. And at this point, Bernie's not willing to back off of his financial demands. The only thing that really could come in is CVC looking at it and saying, it's a losing proposition to lose momentum in our season. So you need to make a race happen.
To me, it's the stuff like this that is going to cause the eventual implosion upon itself of Formula One.
Yeah. I mean, really, when you consider it, the only race in Europe that isn't under threat, well, maybe two, would be Monza and Monte Carlo. And other than that, everything else is constantly, you need to bring more money. Oh, you need to update your facilities. It's a bad business deal, because these facilities barely get by on the money they get, because they have to milk a bunch of money from the government, and then they have to eke a bunch of money out of their spectators so that they can hope to pay Bernie's, kingly ransom to hold these races. And they're left with nothing to improve the facilities and make it viable to continue to have those races there. So then they have to take out these huge loans and try and come up with some way to pay them off. And in the end, it's just these losing propositions. And at least in Europe, nobody's able to come up with that kind of money, because the governments have long tired of handing out the money to Bernie.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. They can't keep up working like this. They cannot do it.
Well, what does it take? Does it take basically having three races in Europe before everybody realizes, hey, maybe this business model doesn't work anymore? So, who knows? But, you know, as we said, as long as Bernie can find some dumb third world dictator to take their place, or some, you know, state of Texas relief fund for major events, you know, he can keep doing this crap. Speaking of Romain Grosjean, Romain has a new mount for the upcoming season. Lotus was the first to launch their car. They launched on Monday, and they launched their new E21. Prominently displayed on the car, it looks exactly the same as last year for the most part, except it's got some red highlights other than the highlight around the rear wing flap, which says Total, the fuel supplier. However, there's rumors that these red flaps are because they're trying to do a deal with Honeywell to be a primary sponsor on the car.
I'm wondering what those Lotus stickers are still doing on there.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering that too, because if they're not getting any money from Lotus, it really just needs to be like a small symbol on the side, because that's the name of the team. But other than that, I don't see the value in having that on there. Lotus, the car that nobody buys. Lotus, the company that's defunct and bankrupt.
Well, it's kind of funny. I'm looking at the picture of it right now, and you see the giant Lotus logo on the rear wing, and you see the giant Lotus logo on the monocoque, and comparatively so, the Gina Financial, who really are footing the bill for this whole thing, is kind of not as prominent.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd.
Neither is Renault, that little tiny thing back by the engine there. I'm like, what the hell? Come on, guys.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, Ginai is the owner of the team, and Renault's just a partner. So, weird, isn't it? One thing to point out on the car that stands out right away is you look at that number 7 on the nose of the car in the press release.
It's still there.
You notice that funny little angle there?
It's still there.
Step nose.
The hunch nose is still there, and I wonder if this is a sign of things to come. You know, last year, the FIA basically like, well, we didn't mean for you guys to do that wacky thing to your nose, but it seems like 11 out of the 12 teams decided to do it. Huh.
Well, you know what? I will say this. Lotus built a damn good car last year.
Yeah, they did. They did.
And it's along the lines of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, well, if it suffered a little in development, but you know what? It still turned out to be a race winner, which is not easy to do in Formula One. And I don't know. I mean, the one thing, you know, reading through some of the press releases and the articles on this, it was plainly said, you know, adding a vanity plate to the nose just adds weight to the car. We've got the aerodynamics figured out. So why would we put a plate there that's just going to add weight? You want the cars to look different? Change the freaking rules.
Yep.
And I mean,
it's your rules, FIA, in the first place that put that unsightly blemish on the nose.
And you look at it and then think about how the McLaren looked in comparison to it, where McLaren typically runs the higher nose setup than everybody else.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the step nose.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned, everybody, because we've got launches going all throughout this week and on into next week to the kickoff of testing, which is, I believe, July 4th. Or February 4th. So,
well, if you're Ferrari, you know, July 4th is probably accurate.
It's usually how it goes with Ferrari, isn't it? Back in the day when you basically released a car and then released the real car by the time you got to Imola and such. Those were the days. Ah, well. Speaking of Ferrari, Pedro De La Rosa is actually going to, you know, he's been signed as Ferrari's third driver, test driver, for this season. And it's just kind of one of those head scratchers why they even have test drivers anymore, because they're allowed so little time on the track. Why would you take any seat time away from your primary drivers?
Hey, those straight line tests require a lot of skill.
Well, maybe that's it. But Pedro de la Rosa is going to be able to test the car at the first test at Jerez next week. And this is in lieu of Fernando Alonso. I remember reading that Fernando is not going to be at the first test. It's kind of an odd situation. Why would Fernando not want to drive the car the first outing?
Well, maybe it's not passed all the inspections yet.
Yeah, maybe Fernando does be done. Like, you guys take it out there. You shake the bugs out of it. I'm not going to risk my life driving that load of crap. Oh,
see
oh,
this face? Oh. This face is the moneymaker.
That's right.
I wonder if Ferrari is doing that same weird thing that they did with the suspension last year.
Oh, yeah, whereas the pull rod suspension on front and back as well.
Right, yeah, which was very unusual to what, I mean, it had been tried before many years ago, and everybody decided it sucked.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yet Ferrari brought it back.
Yeah, I haven't heard any indication one way or another if they're going to stick with that. So
just remember, Mike, everything sucks until Ferrari tries it, and then it's genius.
Well, the last few years, that has not been the case.
Everything it just sucked. Shows how good Fernando Alonso is as a driver, right?
Yeah.
Ferrari has never lost a driver's championship. They have just run out of races in which to win it.
That's a fun way of putting things. Nice yes. Try. Yes. Hey, HRT. We talked about them. Not dead yet. Kind
I
of,
feel happy.
Yeah. HRT, they are dead. Okay, let's not make any illusions here. However, a Canadian and American investor group are trying to buy HRT's team and get their entry slot into F1 for 2014 or for 2013. That said, the FIA basically says, "Yeah, you missed the entry deadline from back in November, so 2014 sounds good." However, Bernie is sitting there saying, "Yeah, 2013's fine. Come on in. As long as you bought the team, I'll make a call."
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And the driver will be Jeremy Mayfield.
I hope this doesn't happen. Nice. I hope this doesn't happen. If they do buy the team, please be next year before they're on track, because I don't want to see what pile of crap they can manufacture to come out there for this season.
I understand the car will be manufactured by Gia.
Nice. So. Optional third cylinder.
Now with four wheels.
Fun.
And new driver, Danica Patrick, going into Formula One.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, Mike, it's funny that you should mention that, because I remember when US F1 was trying to attempt to possibly be a team a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually one name that they did throw out there, was Danica.
Oh, yeah. It was one of those things where they just, you know, hey, we're going to exist next year, and we're looking at drivers like Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Danica Patrick and blah, blah, blah. And it was just one of those things where they're like, hey, look at us, we're trying to be relevant. Yeah, we never called them. We just think they'd be good drivers.
USF1. So, gentlemen, it would appear that we have reached the end of the ride for this week.
Yeah, we do have one quick announcement to make. Due to the absence of Mr. Patterson this evening, who is attending to family duties after working nonstop for something like a month and a half for just the last few days, we have not been able to officiate and adjudicate the contest that we started last week. So please stay tuned to next week to hear who wins all that cool truckload of goober.
I would like to mention as well that even after in this fantasy racing league that Doug and I are involved in, even after he sniped my pick in Mr. Mimo Rojas, I am ahead of him, by the way.
Oh, nice.
in the standings because I scored some serious points in the Rolex 24. So I had Scott Pruitt, Oswaldo Negri, and John Fogarty. So,
did Doug actually bet against Ganassi? Really?
No, he interfered with my strategy because I was the first person to take a Grand Am driver because I took Scott Pruitt. And in the Serpentine draft, when it came back around, I was going to take Mimo Rojas to complete my Voltron, so to speak. And
oh, great visual
And literally, Doug was the pick right before me, and he took Mimo Rojas.
So if you're under the age of 32, you probably need to replace the Voltron reference with the Power Rangers reference because
right,
the Power Rangers ripped off Voltron big time. At least the cool part with the giant, you know, robot that was formed out of five robotic lions. Yeah.
I think that my favorite one, though, is when they did it on Robot Chicken. Have you seen Robot Chicken?
No.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. It's that Adult Swim thing that's done on Cartoon Network that they do at night. And it's a Voltron episode where all the vehicles are trying to combine together to make the giant robot and save this, like, space station thing or whatever that's being attacked.
Yeah.
As it's going on, the people are, you know, just being shot up at the space station. So, like, everybody, you know, combined and they start putting themselves together, but they get it wrong. Then they have to start over, and it's taking so long that people are just dying. It is just priceless. You've got
my favorite one is the one where Voltron gets served by the alien in the breakdancing battle.
Oh, it is.
Ah, yes, you've been served. Anyway, enough Voltron.
Mr. Weitzel, do you have any last minute additions to the show?
No. My arms and my back and my legs are tired because I'm trying to lose my fat.
Well, congratulations. What have you been doing?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
It's evil, though.
It's hard work.
It involves something called plyometrics, and it's not fun.
You know, that actually reminds me. I've gotten involved Monica Hilton, who is the PR director for Brian Herta Autosport. Mm-hmm. Has a challenge going on between she and Gladys from Speed Freaks.
Yeah.
They and there's one other person involved. I can't remember who it is, but we're doing this thing called Fit for the 500.
Okay.
And it's a fitness contest where we have each signed up for teams, and we're being provided exercise plans, and we had to do a fitness test before and a fitness test like the week before the 500 or something like that.
Cool.
And the team that has the biggest fitness changes wins a prize to be named.
Oh, pretty sweet.
So I'm on Monica Hilton's team, so we'll see how that turns out.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, I it's all kinds of craziness going on. I mean, I heard this evening that Miss Judd was available again, so I kind of figure, you know, I work on the guns a little bit, get my style all polished up, you know, I just might have a chance.
Hey, Ashley. Did you know the gun show's in town?
Yeah, indeed.
Ba-boom!
How you doing?
And yes, anyway. I did do the arm curls when I did that, by the way.
By the way, Mr. Weitzel is a very happily married man, and Ashley doesn't have a chance.
So, Mr. Shaw, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Not for this week, but if you want to catch anything on what happened with that really cool Rally America Championship, just start browsing YouTube. There's some good clips out there. One of my favorites is Chris Greenhouse, one of the two-wheel drive drivers, that had an incident with a hay bale that wouldn't fall off his car. He ran into it, just hung there on his windshield, and just wouldn't go away for a little ways. It was pretty entertaining, so do a search for that. It's great to watch.
Why doesn't this tear-off work?
Yeah. I love all those in-car cams. It's fun stuff.
Let's see. The only last-minute Twitter news I can see here is Peter Barron from Starworks is trying to ask Ryan Hunter Ray if there's any possibility of a Ford IndyCar for him next year.
Nice.
So that's pretty much it for this episode, number 173 of the Open Paddock Podcast. And we return to our regular January/February no racing schedule.
So, except for Rally, excuse me. Hello.
Like I said, no racing. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
No racing that we can watch on television.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, you got me there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So I hope you all enjoyed it. Make sure you check out the Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and quit stalking me in real life, please. It's kind of creepy. I'm just kidding. But anyway, see you all next week, and have a good one.
Good night.
Good night.